All right. So normally we wouldn't have a shiur this close to Pesach, but I did not want us to leave the end of the perek for us to resume 3 weeks from now, barely remembering, you know, who Shmuel is. So I thought it worthwhile. We don't need the full hour, I suspect, although you may prove otherwise, we'll see. but I suspect we don't need the full hour for what we have remaining. At this stage, we have learned that Shaul has been rejected, and he cannot be reinstated. Right? We discussed who tore whose cloak, but the bottom line out of this tearing of the cloak or the tunic is that the power is torn away. And Hashem is not going to change his mind, whether that's because Hashem has issued a good decree on behalf of David, that David should be able to become king, or whether that is because Shaul has changed and no longer deserves to have the throne. But Hashem is not going to reinstate Shaul. We talked also about why he's willing to forgive David, but he's not willing to reinstate Shaul. All that was last time. And what remains is the execution of Agag, and then the aftermath between Shmuel and Shaul. So, the execution of Agag is in Perek Tetvav, right, chapter 15, sentence Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Bet. And here, Shmuel is going to execute Agag in an act which is both punishment for Agag and corrective for Shaul's error. So, Vayomer Shmuel, Shmuel declared, this is after Shmuel has gone with Shaul, and Shaul has bowed to Hashem, so this is really an epilogue. Vayomer Shmuel, Hagishu Elias Agag Melech Amalek. Shmuel says, bring me Agag. Vayelech Elav Agag Ma'adanos. And Agag walks to him, Ma'adanos. The word Ma'adanos is a strange word. Those who have translations, so first of all, I know some people here have the art scroll. What does the art scroll say for Ma'adanos? I know some people do.
Chains.
Okay, chains. Ma'adanot as chains. That's Ralbag's approach, and it's one of the views brought in Radak. Someone said, Leona said you have the Sansino. What does the Sansino say? Chains also, adopting the chains idea. I grew up thinking that it was chains. But you look at the commentators and you find other ideas. This is Pasuk Lamed Bet, sentence 32. You have to be in Shmuel, not in Yeshaya.
I am in Shmuel, but it doesn't say. I don't have anything about chains.
I didn't say you did. What's the translation in yours for Ma'adanu? Delicately. There you go. Delicately. And that is indeed another way to take it. And frankly, if we look at the word without knowing context, that's what jumps out at you as a possible translation. To be adin is to be gentle. The adin is to pamper something. So that is, in fact, when you look at the word again, without context, that's what it sounds like. Agag comes to him either in chains or in this kind of, this delicate way. So we're going to come back to that. But we also need to understand the end of the sentence. Vayomer Agag, and Agag said, Achein sar mar hamavet. Achein means but. But the rest of this sentence is also difficult. What does Sar Mar Hamavet mean? So, Alina, you had the art scroll. What does that mean in yours?
Alas, the bitterness of death approaches.
Alas, they're rendering Achein as alas, and then the bitterness of death approaches. So, Hebrew speakers, does that make sense?
That's not what I
No, because the verb, hang on, Susan, the Hebrew verb is sar. Sar usually means what?
To go away.
To go away. So far from it being something that has arrived, it seems really, really strange. Now, Susan, in your edition, you have...
Surely the bitterness of death has turned,
meaning gone away. They're trying to translate sar the way I would have done it. But this whole thing becomes very difficult to understand. Shoshana writes in the chat that I also have Bit Ta'anuk for Ma'adanot. So if you take Aden to be a delicacy, yeah, then you can certainly do that. But this whole thing, this whole sentence of Agag is not straightforward at all in terms of what his mood is, how is he walking, and what does he think is about to happen to him. But let's find out what's about to happen to him. And then afterwards we'll come back to what he said and what he did. Vayomer Shmuel, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, sentence 33. Shmuel said, Kasher shikala nashim charbecha, kene tishkal mi nashim imecha. As your sword rendered women childless, so too your mother should be childless among women. Vayishasev Shmuel es Agag lifnei Hashem ba'Gilgal, and Shmuel executed, really sliced Agag before God in Gilgal. That's a very interesting word, vayishasev. What do your translations do with vayishasev, this verb for Shmuel's execution of Agag?
Hewed.
He hewed him.
Never.
That's what I have.
Like a tree.
Yeah. Cut him down. Sever, somebody said.
Yeah,
severed. Interesting. So, this is interesting too. Right? There's a lot here that I don't understand. What did Agag mean with what he said? What exactly is Shmuel doing when he executes Agag in this way? And I have a general question. Why did Shmuel make a speech? Right? This is an execution. It's kill him. What has he added with this speech? And why does Shmuel execute Agag himself? Why not tell Shaul, okay, you had a job to do, go do it?
He doesn't trust him.
At this point? Maybe, but that's really shocking. It's just the whole thing is so strange. You say to him, look, if you did something wrong, now's your chance to make it up. Go ahead and execute Agag.
It's too late.
Why is it too late? I don't mean it's too late.
He's already finished. He's already said, just wait, this garbage is torn. You came to this farm. He has now taken over the responsibility until the next king is crowned.
He's taking the responsibility until the next king is crowned. Could be. Definitely could be. Shoshana writes in the chat that Vayishasev, her edition, links it to Sayif, which is a sword. My problem with it is just, what's that shin doing there? I don't know about that. But since I'm doing this at my computer, I will take a fast look. I mean, the truth is that this is a perfect example of where the computer is not nearly as good as a concordancia.
I have one if you want me to get it.
Well, I'm not going to make you get up and get it, but I will say that a good concordancia will give you much more to work with than just looking for this word. I am not finding another use of this term.
You can think about the word lechem.
Yeah. Right, and you can have that. The shin, but usually then you have your three letters of the verb after that. You know, that's what's missing here. That's unless you'll tell me that shin samach pei is the root. And Saif loses the shin for some reason. That will be another way to approach it. The whole thing is very, very strange. So, Susan, I see what you wrote, but it doesn't relate to the l'shaseif. That's talking about shikla nashim. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have a different meaning translation.
I don't think so. Render them childless. That's the idea.
I don't know if this is a bereaved, though.
That's true. But that's the way it's usually used in Chumash. I'm surprised to see them say bereaved. Okay.
That's why I was asking.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So, in terms of Agag's
response here. The commentators generally understand that Agag is actually happy until Shmuel ends him. And the message here is to convey what Agag's personality is like and how Shmuel brings the mighty low. So Rashi and Radak offers you three explanations. One of those was chains. But Radak's first two explanations, as well as Rashi, as well as Malbim, render it that Agag is happy, that Agag is arrogant. If you take a look at source number one on the sheet, I brought you Radak, Ma'adanot, Kitargumo, like the Aramaic commentary, Targum Yonatan, Mifanka, right? If you know modern Hebrew, a Mifunak, right? A Mifunak is somebody who is pampered, who can't deal with things that are coarse and rough. Klamar, halach elav kimahalach hamalachim bita'anug. There's where you got that word, Shoshana. He walked to Shmuel as kings do, with pleasure. Klamar, aval pisha karav lemisa halach elav bega'ava. Even though he's close to death, he still walks with arrogance. That's your first explanation of ma'adanot, is he walks with arrogance. Second explanation, v'yesh mefarshim ma'adanot kishurim. Actually, sorry, I jumped. Opei Rusho, sorry, the second approach. Halach elav b'tanug u'besimcha. He walked to him with enjoyment and joy. Ki bachar moso mechayav. He chose death over life. He's happier being dead because he doesn't want to be a captive of the Jews. And then the last approach, v'yesh mefarshim ma'adano kishurim. Some say it means bonds. Kolamar v'kishurim u'b'shal shala'ot shal barzel, in bonds and iron chains. So the idea here, as Rashi reads it, as the first two approaches in Radak read it, as Malbim reads it, is that he is doing this happily. He feels like the end has come, and it's a good thing. And therefore, commentators often read Sar Mar Hamavet as if he's saying death is no longer bitter. Sar, the word sar, is to leave. The bitterness of death has left me, is the way that that many commentators read it. Even those who say that he's saying the bitterness of death has arrived could still have this overall idea in mind. He's just happy about it. So if you take a look at Ralbag in source number two, he says that he's welcoming it. When he saw Shmuel, I mistranslated. I was writing too quickly when I did the translation. It's not when Shmuel saw. It's when he saw Shmuel, is what it should say on your sheet. His image demonstrated his piety and his mercy. So Agag says, ah, this is good. He says, now bitterness of death is gone. I've fallen into the hands of somebody who's going to have mercy on me. That's the reaction that Agag has. As read by Ralbag, death will not be bitter. Or Abarbanel takes it a step further. And he says in number three, Shalach b'tanug u'b'simcha, l'fi sh'haya yodeya she'yemiseyu. He knew that he would get killed. Ki b'char maves mechaye cherpa v'shevi. He chose death over a life of shame and being held in captivity. Sar mara maves, death isn't bitter for me anymore either because of who Shmuel is, or death isn't bitter because it's better to be dead than to be tortured. Better that than to be humiliated, which Shaul himself is going to make that decision later on, right, when he thinks he's going to be captured by the Plishtim. So he chooses death as opposed to captivity, you know, and humiliation. So Agag's reaction is generally understood to be a reaction of joy, a reaction of arrogance. Whether he's in chains or walking daintily doesn't change the way that they look at it, it seems. And Shmuel says, I'm killing him myself. And I am killing him brutally. So keep in mind what we've already said about the sparing of Agag. We've already suggested that Shaul thought he was not sparing Agag at all. He was just holding him in order to parade him around the country for the sake of the national pride of the Jews, for the sake of humiliating Amalek. He's planning on executing him. Abarbanel said that. It was possible to read that in Radak as well. Shaul's sin is disobedience, because God didn't say to have a parade. God said, wipe out all of Amalek. And hence the Gemara in Yuma says, Maaseh de Agag, the event with Agag, was why he lost the throne. It matters that Agag not die on parade, but instead Agag has to die in battle. That was what was supposed to happen. And I think the point wasn't just his death, it was really how he would die. Because remember, this isn't supposed to be a standard war. This is supposed to be a war against Amalek. And he has to die in a circumstance that makes clear that it's not a normal war. This is not supposed to be conquest. This would have been accomplished if you had a war in which they didn't take spoils and you didn't parade him as a trophy. So now, Shmuel is going to be the one to do it. And by having Shmuel do it instead of Shaul, it's not the conquering king, it's the religious prophet. It's an act of God. Milchama Lashem ba'amalek. I think that's the idea that Shmuel is going for here in what he does. And now let's see how that fits the details. There is one weakness in what I'm saying, but
was he alone? Was Amisrael watching this?
We don't know. We're given no information. Except that Shmuel addresses somebody saying, bring me Agag. So somebody's there. I think that's the idea. So that fits the brutality of it. Ralbag makes that point. If you take a look at source number 4, he says, Laudia otzem abirus leib Shmuel ugvuraso. This shows the great courage of Shmuel and his might. Ad shalo yarei miladaber kashos keela l'shaul meyoso melech. First of all, he wasn't afraid to speak to Shaul as harshly as he did. He did ask permission, but he did speak harshly. V'harag Agag v'derech achzarius, and he killed Agag in a cruel way. Both on Hanis Karpo, as mentioned here, l'shalem lo mita keneged mida, ulamalos mitzvas Hashem yisbarach. Paying him back measure for measure, right? Jeanette wrote in the margin, mida keneged mida, and fulfilling the command of God. Ki elo atchunos ra'ui shetiyen elanavi, because this is part of being a prophet. Rutzalomar shalo yirami shum adam, not to fear anyone, ach yikana lemalos mitzvas Hashem v'chol oz, but to humbly fulfill the divine command at full strength. So the way that Ralbag reads it is, he's demonstrating that this is the divine command. Now the truth is, I'm sparing you, I'm chomel, to use the term of Malbim. I'm sparing you the details on how he killed him as presented in Medrash Shmuel. If you wanted something that's pretty grotesque, Medrash Shmuel Yudchet Vav has a lot more detail about the execution, and it's pretty gross, so I'm just going to leave it there. But Ralbag notes that in addition to doing this as what Agag deserves, and in addition to doing this to demonstrate it's not the normal way, you do benefit in source number 5 by the fact that it's going to intimidate everybody else when they find out what Shmuel has done. But one point on this I'm not confident in, and this is where I say there's a weakness in my approach. It could still be right, but I want to point out the flag. The speech that Shmuel gives, right? His speech. It's, on the one hand, you could say it supports my view. It's a speech of righteous indignation. It's a speech of divine justice. And it goes back to the 3 explanations we gave of why Amalek is different. Their character is cruel. Their relationship with God, as well as their relationship with us. Like, all of these warrant unique treatment for them, and Shmuel is speaking to that, especially if you take Rashi's view, that when he says, as your sword bereaved women, that it's our women, that it was what he had done to us. However, honestly, I would have felt better about my explanation if Shmuel had said in his speech, Milchama l'Hashem ba'amalek. You know? God's war against Amalek. That's what he should have said. So that's a weakness in my approach. Susan points out that in her commentary it says the women are bereaved as widows. So the problem that I have with that approach is twofold. Number one, the verb in the Hebrew, shin chaf lamed, is used in the Torah to speak about specifically parental bereavement. So, for example, Rivka says about losing Yaakov and Esav, Lama Eshkal, Gam Shnechem, Yom Echad. There are other examples that can be brought. That's one weakness. The other is that it actually says, Kasher Shikla Nashim Harbecha, Kein Tishkal Ni Nashim Imecha. He says, your mother will become, not your wife will become, your mother will become. Killing him means that she's losing a child, not a husband. That's why I'm going to stick to my explanation. But the Ralbag also notes, hold on one second, just if you take a look at Ralbag at number 6, he also notes one other layer in Shmuel's speech. Amar lo, ein ye'in kein kemosha tachoshev. He says to Agag, it's not the way you think. You think it's going to go gently? You're going to die a cruel death. Remember, Ralbag said that Agag thought Shmuel is this gentle, pious person and he'll go easy on me. He says, you deserve to die this way, measure for measure. Someone was going to say something before I said that.
It's Nanette.
Yes.
Approached him with faltering steps, and faltering steps suggests to me gingerly, like it wasn't the arrogance that is in the it isn't the arrogance that is in the like faltering steps means gingerly, like maybe the translation isn't correct.
It's interesting. What edition are you working with?
JPS.
Mm-hmm. So JPS would be most likely to follow Ralbag, I would think, normally. And that's not his approach here. That's not his approach at all on this. Ralbag says he's in chains. So they're playing with the idea of a din, to be gentle. But honestly, number one, I'm not clear on that as a translation. And number two, I don't understand what it would be doing here then. What is it trying to say? He walked
with scared. That he was scared that he wasn't, he wasn't, that he was faltering steps means sort of gingering. He was scared to go.
Right. Right. So, again, I think that that's, I could hear it and then saying that he was reassured when he saw Shmuel, but I'm not so convinced. The Linda notes, the translation says delicately, you got here late, so if you go back to the recording, you'll hear what we said in the beginning about that. But the delicate one tends to be explained as holding himself delicately. That's the idea. Okay.
And just one more question, the measure to measure, is that, from Shakespeare, is that the first time that measure to measure is used?
So measure for measure is a classic rabbinic phrase, midah keneged midah. It's from the Gemara.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like other things of Shakespeare, we got there first. Okay. So... So Shmuel is going to carry out the execution himself. I will note, because Susan pointed it out in a comment on the chat to me, that Rashi says widows. Rashi is picking up on something seen in the Midrash about the women, who are now bereaved. He actually reads it not as they. Rashi is quoting a Midrash about what the people from Amalek used to do to the Jews when they fought them. That would harm them and prevent having children as well. That's what he's... Yeah. So, I wanted to add one note here. When you see this... when you see what Shmuel does to Agag... And he's making it a religious act. He's making it a brutal act. And he says, Davka, it has to be a brutal act. That's required. That's what's right in this circumstance. So if you flip the sheet over to the other side, I only put it on the other side for space reasons, because otherwise it wouldn't have fit well. But it belongs here in our shir. So what you see there is a scan that somebody put online. After Eichmann was sentenced to death, his wife petitioned for clemency. Do we have any German speakers here? No? I used this in a shir somewhere else, and there was a German speaker there who actually read it. I mean, I can tell you what it is. She petitions President Yitzhak Ben Zvi for mercy because she is his wife and she is a mother of children, and so she asks him to have mercy on Eichmann. And if you look at the upper right-hand corner, you see Yitzhak Ben Zvi's note, which seems to be attached to the letter. It's a decades-old post-it note, so to speak. But he quotes our pasuk. Vayomer Shmuel, he adds in the words El Agag, Kasher Shiklana Shim Charbecha, Kein Tishkal Minashim Imecha.
Wow.
He uses the that's really something. He also notes, to be fair, that he wasn't the one to come up with that idea. He says that it was a Chaver Knesset, Dr. Nurak, who had pointed out that pasuk in an article in Hatzofet. If that's not best use of a pasuk, I don't know what is. That's an award-winning use of a pasuk. Okay, so now we get to the last two psukim in our perek. Vayelech Shmuel haRamasa. Shmuel goes back to Ramah. Ramah, remember, is where he's from, right? Shmuel haRamati. We've talked about that before. V'Shaul alal beisokiv at Shaul. Shaul goes back to his home to Givat Shaul. Commentators know we've never met a place called Givat Shaul. Shaul was living in Givat Binyamin. But given that he's the king, it could be it gets renamed as Givat Shaul. Okay. V'lo yasak Shmuel erosa Shaul ad yom moso. Shmuel does not see Shaul again until the day of his death. Ki his abel Shmuel el Shaul, for Shmuel is grieving for Shaul. Vashem Nicham, there's that word a third time in our chapter. Ki Himlich es Shaul al Yisrael, Hashem has regretted appointing Shaul as king over Israel. So they each go home. Shmuel has denied Shaul's request for support before the nation, right? But Shmuel still grieves for Shaul. The divine rejection here is final, right? Nicham, Hashem has regretted it, either meaning that Shaul was never supposed to hold the throne forever, that was one idea, or because Shaul had actually become a different person and therefore he didn't deserve to have the throne anymore. But he won't see him again. Now, it says he won't see him again ad yom moto, till the day of his death. So, if you take a look on your sheet at source number... No, sorry, not that one. That's actually not the source, sorry. If you were to take a look at Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Tet, Shmuel 1, chapter 19, you would find there that even though Shmuel will not see him... Sorry, I did something odd in my notes, and I'm not sure why I did it. Let me do things in the proper order. The first point is what I brought you on the sheet in source number 7. And even though it's later in Shmuel, in Shmuel Aleph, I figured let me just put it for you on the sheet with a translation. This is when Shaul is pursuing David. Okay? So, but David barach, David fled, vayimaleit, vayavo el Shmuel haramasa. He comes to Shmuel in Ramah. Vayagelo es kol asher asa lo Shaul. He tells him Hashaul is trying to kill him. This is right after Shaul plots to kill David in the home that David shares with Michal, Shaul's daughter. So David escapes. We'll have to get to that. And he goes to Shmuel and tells him what happened. Vayeshavu b'Nayot, and they stayed in a place called Nayot. Vayugad l'Shaul emor hinei David b'Nayot b'Rama, and Shaul finds out that David is there. Vayishlach Shaul malachim l'kacha, says David. Shaul sends messengers to go get David. Vayaris l'hakas hanavim nibim. But remember, Shmuel has student prophets. We talked about them ages ago when Shaul first became king. There are student Nevi'im around. There is a lahaka, which is a great word. Lahaka in modern Hebrew is used to refer to a musical band. So when JPS does the translation here, it's a band of prophets that actually fits. So they are all prophesying. And Shmuel is standing there. When Shmuel is standing there, and the prophets are there, but he amalachei Shaul ruach Elokim. Shaul's agents start to experience prophecy. Vayisnavu gam hema, they become neviim as well. This is a story that plays out in other incidents, whether in Tanakh or whether we're talking about in Midrash as well, where someone is inappropriately pursuing somebody else and he sends agents and the agents end up going over to the other side. If you remember the Gemara's story of Unculus with the mezuzah, where the Romans, his uncle sends agents and he convinces them to come over to his side by pointing out that my king guards me instead of me needing to guard the king. So here, Shaul's agents become Nevi'im. Word comes back to Shaul, he sends more people. They also prophesy. He sends a third group. They also prophesy. So Shaul goes to Ramah. He goes and he asks, where is Shmuel? Where is David? They're in Nayos. And he goes there. And he experiences prophecy as well. And you can see the story there, how he becomes a Navi. And we get that phrase which we saw ages ago, Hagam Shaul. And we'll come back to that, God willing, when we learn Perek Yutet. But my point here, and the reason why I bring it, is commentators note that then they do see each other again. It's not true that they don't see each other again. They will. However, Abarbanel explains that there Shmuel isn't going to Shaul. That's the difference. The pasuk here says, The pasuk here says Shmuel did not continue to see Shaul, but apparently Shaul coming to him is okay. What should that remind you of as Pesach is coming? Right. Exactly. Moshe and Paro. Paro says, on the day you see me again, you shall die. And Moshe says, Kain dibarta, exactly, lo osif odros panecha, I am not going to see your face again. However, in Makas Bechoros, Paro comes to Moshe. And that apparently is okay. So the same thing, same idea here. The other time when they're going to see each other again is after Shmuel's death. Somebody wrote in the question of whose death. When it says Shmuel did not see Shaul until the day of his death, it means Shmuel's death. The pronoun should refer to Shmuel, and the Midrash explains, because we will have a story, we've talked about it already, in which, after Shmuel is dead, Shaul is going to have a necromancer call him up to speak to him. So he'll see him, but it's going to be after his death. But here's my question. Why not see him? Why won't he see him? Yeah, why won't Shmuel go see Shaul anymore? He's functioning as king, you know.
Is he so disappointed in him and hurt?
So I think that's the answer. Meaning, the pasuk tells us, ki hit abel.
He's mourning him all the time.
Right. If not for those words, I would have said it's because seeing him means conveying some kind of prophetic instruction to carry out as king. And that's not supposed to happen anymore.
But what was the intention originally when he said he will no longer be king? Was this supposed to be immediate or after Shavuot's death? Or, in other words, did he mean only that the lineage will not continue? Or did that Shavuot himself would no longer continue?
So the first time, the way we took it, I think the view that I favored, we gave multiple approaches, but the view that I favored was Adak's view, which was also Nanette's view, that the first time round was that his children wouldn't carry on after him, and the second time is that he is actually losing the throne. And it fits the wording in the sentence is very, very well. So to my mind, that's the lead answer. So Shaul really isn't supposed to be king. And in fact, in the next parak, he's going to anoint David. Right? He's going to try to make David the new king. So, yeah, it's not going to work out so smoothly.
But he doesn't know that, does he?
Given that he said to Shaul, Hashem has already selected your successor, I think he does. So, like I said, if not for the words ki hitabel, I would have assumed that what's going on here is he's no longer king. I'm not going to see him. I'm not going to convey to him messages for what he's supposed to do. However, the word ki hitabel, I think, makes it fairly clear, especially turn the page to the next chapter, the opening line of the next chapter, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. And look what Hashem says to Shmuel. Ad masai ata misabel el Shaul. How long will you be grieving for Shaul? So in other words, it's entirely personal. God didn't tell him to do it. Right? Hashem, just the opposite, says to him, enough of that already. Go anoint David. So it really seems to be a personal avelus. So at this stage, this is what we have. Number one, and really the main point that I wanted to get to, is that this parak is not what we thought it was, or what I thought it was. I won't speak for you. One person out of the 17 on this call, I always thought of this parak the way that you think of it in shul when it's read for Zohar, the Shabbos before Purim, which is to say, it's a story about Amalek. Right? It's the Jews and Amalek. But it's not true. It's not a story about Amalek. It's a story about Shaul, Shmuel, and monarchy. Now, really, had I thought about it, that would have been obvious based on real estate. How many sentences here actually address the war with Amalek or anything Amalek did? It took 1 second for Shaul to beat Amalek. The whole parak has nothing to do with that. What it's like. The Tuesday night shiur that I'm doing for men on Sefer Shoftim. So we just did Yiftach and the story with his daughter and with Ephraim. And Yiftach is there for two prakim, for two chapters. And I think it's one, maybe two sentences about his war with Ammon. Everything else is his attempt at diplomacy with Ammon, his negotiations with the Jews to lead them, the business with his daughter, and then the fight with Ephraim. The war really isn't the point. You can tell by where the Pesukim place their emphasis. So what I'm seeing here is that this is primarily a message about how the monarchy is supposed to work, a message which we started with in chapter 8. The king is supposed to take instructions from God via the Navi and do what he's supposed to do. Shaul doesn't do that, and in the end loses the throne as a result. That's the message that we are reinforcing here. And so at this stage, Shaul is running the kingdom, but he's no longer the Melech. God does not recognize him as king anymore. And that may have been built in from the start. From the beginning, he's from Binyamin after all, like Ramban said, but it may have been because he's demonstrated that he won't listen, and therefore God says, Nichamti. Nichamti, again, we said this a few times when we first saw the word. When you're referring to God, means I act in the manner of somebody who regrets something. That's the way that, that's what nechamti means. It means I act in the manner of someone who regrets something, which is to say, I'm reversing what I did before. That's the idea there. So what will have to happen next, God willing, will be the arrival of David, who will become, of course, you know, the king of Israel. So I thank you very much. I wish you a healthy Pesach, a happy Pesach, and if you can't be with family, at least Zoom with them beforehand, Zoom with them afterwards, you know, during Chol HaMoed, and we should get through this, God willing. But I do expect... Chag Sameach. I do expect that when we resume, which will be, God willing, on the 23rd, we will still be on Zoom, yes. I didn't want to make the pun. I leave it to others to do that. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Stay safe.
Thank you so much.